Kieran Howells here, your podcast host for this episode of Retail Gazette's Unpacked podcast. And this week we are talking about returns. They're a necessary part of business, but you're probably going to lose money on them, right? Well, no, actually, maybe not. My guest this week is going to talk to us about how you can transform the returns process from something that businesses just have to deal with into something really incredible that can be an active benefit for you. So his name is Samir Kamnani. He is from Loop, which is a very interesting company in the returns space. And together we're going to really get into what returns mean in 2025 and how to make them work for you. So let's dive in.
Hi, everyone. I'm Samir Kamnani from the Loop Returns team. Really excited to be chatting today about returns. And what my role is on the Loop team is I'm on our product marketing team. So I work very closely with our product and engineering teams to bring new features and bring our platform to the market and educate the market on how you can use our platform to best improve your commerce operations. And I've been at Loop for about 3 years and I'm currently based in the States.
Okay, fantastic. So it's great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I guess first things first, can you tell us what the current situation is with returns? I mean, it's just a necessary evil for most companies, right? Why should retailers be paying close attention right now?
Yeah, definitely. I love that term you used of necessary evil, because I think that's how returns are very much viewed by a lot of folks right now of, you know, they happen, you can't really stop them, and you just need something to deal with them. But I think viewing returns more as a point of retention is very key. And the reason for that is because I think when you look at the current situation for the market outside of returns, even acquisition costs are obviously on the rise and have been for about, you know, 5 years now. And operational costs are very much on the rise as well when we talk about shipping rates and even cross-border shipping and tariffs coming into play and 3PL costs, et cetera. I think when all of those costs are very high right now, it makes retention even more important. I pulled a few stats before coming into this, and we know that 35% of business revenue comes from new customers, while 65% comes from repeat customers. So if a first-time customer does shop with your brand, they get their item, and they're not happy with it, maybe it doesn't fit, maybe it doesn't look exactly like how they were hoping it to, that's not because they are unhappy with the brand itself. It's maybe just they didn't find that right item. So then that point of return becomes very important from turning that first-time customer into a loyal repeat shopper. And again, relating it to, we know that acquisition costs are very high. So if you do acquire that customer, but then fail to retain them, that is a big loss.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge number of people who, you know, you could be losing from your business if you basically make them go through the ringer to just be able to send something back, probably just to get it again in the right size, right? Or something similar.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so do you think that actually the vast majority of businesses have some very dramatic improvements to make when it comes to their return processes?
I would say so. I think there's a varying degree of, you know, where different brands are at on their return optimization journeys. But I think what we still see a lot of today is manually handling returns. So as a consumer, I'll go to a brand's website and see that it says on their return policy, like, to start a return, to email their support team. And that's the best I can do at that point. Also, with myself being based in the States, and I shop with a lot of UK-based brands and EU-based brands as well, even worse than when you look at, okay, maybe they have a great return process for domestic returns, but then for an international customer, it's again like, hey, sorry, can't help you, too bad. I think there are a lot of improvements that can be made, because if you think about it as well, a very common thing consumers do is if they see that submitting a return isn't easy, they kind of just, for lack of better phrasing, take the L on that, on that item return. And they're kind of like, all right, now this is sitting in my, in a corner in my house and nothing's going to happen with it. Or worse, it ends up in the trash or something. So I think making it easier to return a good and making that more of an automated process that doesn't involve reaching out to an actual person can help both the consumer as well as the brand, because then returns aren't this headache eating up CX time and the support team's time. And it's more so, again, a point of satisfaction for the shopper, and it saves the brand's team time.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? I have so been there where I've ordered something from, say, the US or another country, and I don't like it when it arrives. And I just think, I am not going through the faff of sending it back. That is not happening. But you're completely bang on that. You know, in this industry, we are all, first and foremost, consumers, as well as actively in the industry. And it's so true that a bad experience, a negative experience, or knowing that you're going to have to go through that faff if you don't like something, it puts you off, you know, immediately, if not after making a purchase and not being happy with that process. So, and that just seems like that's the standard these days.
Definitely. And we know even that, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but we do know that a majority of consumers, to your point about if they know that's going to be a hassle later on, they may not even place that first order to begin with, because, you know, they have not tried the brand before. They don't know their sizing. And if they see that, oh, there isn't an easy way to return, that might deter them to another option instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But we've made quite a bold claim here, and this is worth, you know, noting what that bold claim is. And that is that actually you can basically reverse your fortunes on returns. Yeah. So, you know, turning them from a necessary evil into an actually a profit-driven activity, something that can totally kind of transform the relationship that you have with your customers, but also not cost you the world. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge claim. So yeah. How, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. Returns are seen as that necessary evil. And what I believe most brands that don't have a automated solution or like a fancy returns portal in place right now, what they're doing when they get a support ticket in for a return request, I think a lot of brands are just trying to close that ticket as fast as possible and, you know, move on from the request. And so all they're doing is issuing a refund and telling the consumer a way to send it back. And that's pretty much it. And that's the end of story. Mm-hmm. But instead of that, we know that a lot of times when someone is returning, it is mainly for a different size or color of what they originally wanted. It's not that they didn't like the item itself. It's that it maybe wasn't that perfect match. And so I think on one hand, making it easy to just get that different size or color, then you have saved the sale, essentially. Instead of issuing a refund, all you're doing is a replacement. So that revenue that you originally made on the initial sale does not go away, and it's not contributing to a loss on your balance sheet and on your brand P&L. Mm-hmm. Then I think there's another opportunity there as well of, let's say the consumer does just want a refund. That's kind of what they're coming in with the mindset of wanting, using a returns process and a returns portal to try and shift their behavior and incentivize for the outcome that you do want, which would be an exchange. And again, keeping that revenue within the business is a very premium experience and an opportunity to wow that customer. And again, can contribute to them becoming a loyal shopper that keeps coming back to your brand. And so what we do at Loop, kind of like I was saying, first we'll just ask the customer if they want, you know, a simple size or color difference, or if they just want a refund. Let's say they do move forward with saying they want a refund. We then will prompt them with bonus credit. And this is something that brands can set. And it's basically an incentive of, hey, we know you said you want a refund, but what if we give you 10 extra pounds to shop again? Does that change your mind? And a lot of times we see that it does change their mind. And by doing that and kind of, again, going now a step beyond just a simple size or color difference, you can open up your entire shopping catalog. So again, this is really when the shopper was like, no, I didn't really like this item. It's not about the fit or the color. But hey, if you're maybe giving me some extra cash to shop with, yeah, let me go look at your website again and see, is there another item I want to try out? And now in that case, you have not only saved that initial sale, but you also have created an opportunity for them to potentially spend more with your brand by looking again through your entire catalog. And all of that happening in a seamless experience where, again, the shopper doesn't need to actually speak to or email a customer service agent. That is an opportunity to wow them and, again, make them more of someone that's likely to come back and shop with your brand.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I guess to throw you a challenging one, perhaps. We hear all the time that the human touch is desirable to shoppers. Where is the balance in there between the efficiency of making it, I don't know, a digital product or an automated experience and having that human touch, especially as you were mentioning that kind of experiential retail? You know when you've had a great experience with a brand. So does, you know, where's that balance?
Definitely. I think that really comes into play with omnichannel experiences and going into the store, which I think is another great option for returning as well. Let's say you bought something online and then you want to take it into the store to return. I think that's a great example of a human interaction. But I think for the most part, when it comes to e-commerce, when I picture e-commerce shopping, it's sitting on the couch in your pajamas and not wanting to speak to someone and just to do it all online on your phone or your laptop, right? So I think bringing that aspect into e-commerce returns of, hey, I just want to be able to do this from my phone on my couch, I think that goes a long way. And then if a consumer has a very unique use case, that's, I think, where the human touch comes in. But if you can automate maybe 95% of all of the returns that are, again, fairly simple, majority are just wanting a different size or a color, and then maybe they want to go look at your whole catalog, I think that goes a long way. And the fact that they didn't need to actually reach out to a real person makes them feel better.
That does totally make sense, because it's actually anxiety inducing when you've spent quite a bit of money, right?
Right. And having to explain like why you didn't like it or why you want to return it, not obviously the best experience or the most comfortable experience for the shopper. I'm thinking about like the analogy of when you go to sign up for a gym versus try to cancel for a gym, and the way they make that so much harder. Like, it would be so nice from the shopper's perspective to just be able to handle it, right?
So tell me a bit more about this kind of promoting exchanges over refunds piece. And I really like the idea that you said about, actually, you know, we're going to incentivize you going back into this store and exploring what else we have. Tell me a bit more about that. And also, you know, is this something that you've seen actually have a really marked effect on businesses?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, so I think that biggest piece in there is that bonus credit, where it's, that is kind of your chance to turn this refund into something that the revenue will actually stay with the business, because you've already offered them, again, a simple size or color exchange. That's the easy part that we know majority of returns are for. But if that's not the case and the shopper is saying, no, I don't want this item, I just want my refund, give it back to me, that little incentive could, again, completely change that outcome of being, let's say, you know, they bought a 100-pound item instead of now a 100-pound loss for the brand. It could be a $120 item now that they're exchanging for, and that's even more upside. So by incentivizing a bit of, you know, here's some extra cash to spend, go look at our site again, you're doing two things. You're making the return process, which has been seen as a headache, not just by the brand, but also, again, by the consumer too. You're making it feel like shopping again, which is something the shoppers love to do. So you're really wowing them in that moment and showing them how much you care about them as shoppers. Some stats I have are, we did a survey with UK consumers, and 96% said retailers who offer flexible and extensive return policies care more about them as shoppers. So you're, again, making the shopper feel like you actually care about them and want them to find the item that they will be happy with. And what you're also doing, again, through that bonus credit incentive, which we treat in Loop just as a simple discount code through Shopify. So it does not, you know, affect any sort of accounting reconciliation and things like that. We try to make that process as simple as possible and have it all flow in through Shopify well. And that leads to, again, by incentivizing them and making items in your catalog available, we've seen that our top performing brands at Loop have retained up to 80% of their revenue from returns in one year. And we've also seen that it contributes to their customer lifetime value increasing over time, because, again, you're not just kind of getting the return over with and just trying to close the ticket. You're actually using it as that moment to impress the customer and turn them into a loyal customer.
Yeah, that's so, I mean, that number speaks for itself. I mean, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. I love what you said there. It's so interesting to hear what you said about actually. So I was thinking, right, I buy, I don't know, a blue pair of shoes that cost me 90 quid. And I don't like the shoes. I don't know, the blue wasn't what I was expecting. And then I say, okay, I want my money back on these. And then you as a business say to me, actually, if you find something else you want, we'll give you £10 towards that. Mm-hmm. Now, actually, as you say, you're upselling them probably the next level, aren't you? Because I'm not going to go, okay, I'm going to go and find another 80 quid pair of shoes and then get £10 off. I'm going, oh, that's £10 towards an even better pair of shoes.
Exactly.
So there's one thing that we do have to talk about, kind of the elephant in the room, I guess, and that is returns fees. And we were talking about, you know, if my pair of blue shoes, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with these blue shoes, but if my pair of blue shoes is from America, you know, the real thing that I'm worried about, as well as the faff of the process of returning, is also how much it's going to cost me to return those, you know, that item.
Yeah.
So obviously there's controversy around return fees. What's your stance on that and why?
Definitely. I think it's very interesting because when you maybe look back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I think mainly around the COVID pandemic, everyone was kind of, you know, it was the e-commerce boom and everyone was shopping online and everyone was returning online. And I think we all really indexed for, we need to make this like the most convenient experience possible and free returns and all of that. And now that, you know, the boom has kind of died down, it really is critically looking at operational costs, and returns are expensive. You've already paid for the shipping to send it to the customer, and now you have to ship it back. And then to your point about if the item is from another country, there may be duties and taxes involved. And then I know, obviously, tariffs have been a hot topic recently, and those are increasing. So there's so many costs to consider that I think return fees have shifted. We have now seen 63% of Loop merchants now charge a return fee of some sort, and that is up 47% from the start of 2020. So it's becoming a lot more popular in terms of, it's just kind of, again, going back to a necessary evil. But I think it's about a bit of a mindset shift to the shoppers as well. And it's educating shoppers that, hey, returns are a very costly investment. And also, you know, they're terrible for the environment. Kind of placing a bit more of a fee on that could help enforce that education to the market of, you know, this isn't necessarily a good thing. We want to limit the amount of people that we call serial returners or kind of like abusing returns a bit, which would be buying something to wear on a night out and then trying to return it, or buying not necessarily an abuse of the policy, but buying, you know, buying 10 things with the expectation that you're only going to keep two of them. Like, that's totally fine. But I think there's a bit of onus then of like, okay, if you know you are going to return, you know, there potentially should be a fee or something associated with that. Mm. I think overall, though, there definitely is no one-size-fits-all approach for implementing return fees. And I think we're even seeing with ASOS now implementing fees, and I know like Zara implemented a few years ago, definitely these big household name brands are looking into it and will be guiding the way of how other brands do it. And I think there are ways to kind of start small instead of just slapping on a flat £5 fee for everyone. Like, you can kind of target those use cases I was mentioning earlier. So if someone is a quote unquote serial returner, you can maybe have return fees start after their first two or three returns. There's no fee at first and then starts later. Or Loop also does have a relatively new model that we have launched, which is kind of prepaying for returns. So instead of having just a return fee show up, what some brands have elected to do is basically have free returns as a add-on in checkout. So you can pay a small, maybe just like £1 to £2 fee up front in checkout to then guarantee a free return later. And if you don't do that, then it kind of has, you've shown that transparency to the shopper that like, hey, if you don't opt for this, you can still return later, but you are going to have a fee, like make sure you're okay with that. So a couple different ways to go about it. And again, I think there is no one size fits all approach here. And it's definitely something that is picking up steam again as every single cost across the board is on the rise and returns are very expensive.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. And I guess the other thing that we must say is that the cost of returns can also be astronomical depending on what the size and weight of the product is. I mean, you know, if someone's buying something huge, it's going to cost you as a business a heck of a lot more than it is if they're buying a pair of socks, right?
100%. Yeah, to that point about the pair of socks even, I think there's even something to mention there of if it's just like not even worth returning. Like, let's say the item itself is only £5. Is that really worth the shipping back? And then if it's from another country, like getting through all the duties and taxes, like, is that worth it? So I think another piece there is electing to just have the shopper keep the item, like still give them their refund, either a full refund or a partial refund, whatever you think is fair. But then being like, hey, yeah, don't bother shipping it. It's fine. And then you don't need to worry about the shipping cost.
Mm, yeah, because actually it could cost you more to get that pair of socks back.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I guess, again, that's if you're building a relationship with a customer and you're looking to, you know, get them on board as a return customer, it's that kind of thing which I'm sure shoppers really, really appreciate. And it comes back to that personal service piece that we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm, 100%.
So the other side of that same coin really is we know that probably the vast majority of returns are for that exact reason. I bought a blue pair of shoes and I just don't really like them and I just want to return them or maybe get something else or maybe get my refund. But there are bad actors out there, aren't there, who use the returns process for fraudulent purposes.
Yeah.
So and that is something obviously perennially on the minds of retailers, being vulnerable to fraud. So how does that play into the refund process and how can people protect their businesses from that?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. So I think an important distinction is to be made between kind of return abusers and actual fraudsters. I think some of the examples I mentioned earlier of, like, you know, buying 10 items with the expectation that you're only going to keep two or three, or mm-hmm. things like that, those are more of just kind of like policy abusers, but not actual fraud. So I think yeah. those can be solved by, you know, placing a bit more guardrails, maybe a return fee, things like that. But then, yeah, there is full on fraud happening of, like, I'm getting my refund, but sending back an empty box on purpose, or yeah. I'm maybe getting the refund and then not sending it back, and then, or using a, what's it called, like a temporary credit card or mm-hmm. something, and then canceling that, so then they can't take the money back. We found that for every £100 returned, retailers are now losing about £10 of that to return fraud. So it definitely is on the rise. And it's one of those things where, do brands want to maybe make their return process, like, super gated and super difficult for majority of their customers when this is truly only a few bad actors? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where I think maintaining the customer experience is at the forefront, but then placing that strategic friction around those bad actors and identifying who they are and catching it before it happens. So what Loop has is a machine learning model that has been studying fraudulent returns for over a year now. And now it's at a point where it is proactively flagging when a return might be fraudulent. And then that is flagged to the merchant to look into before it's actually approved or before a refund is sent out or anything like that. So then the brand can take it from there. And then also, if it really is a fraudster, can kind of block that person from ever doing returns again. But it's, again, going back to only really making sure you're placing that friction on those bad actors and not letting your good customers suffer because of it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You don't want to kind of completely ruin the process for everyone else just because a very small fraction of people are abusing it, I guess.
Definitely, definitely.
So to pivot completely to a different area, I really wanted to talk to you about automation. And I know that's one of those really big buzzwords that's everywhere at the moment. Everyone's talking about automation, but it does seem like it could be a really interesting part of the returns process. I feel like it's exactly that kind of process that actually this nebulous concept can be practically applied to. So what's your stance on that? Can it be used to kind of make the process easier, reduce operating costs, that kind of thing?
Definitely. I think at its core, Loop's platform and the returns portal that shoppers actually submit their returns on and, you know, get the outcome they want, that is a true automation platform. It is a self-service experience for the shopper that takes the manual lift off of the support teams. And so automating that whole process can severely decrease the amount of tickets that are coming in to support about returns. And we've seen that in the last 12 months, Loop has saved our merchants that were previously on a manual solution, like just handling returns through support tickets, an estimated £8 million in CX time savings. That's very good in terms of, again, just that self-service experience. But then taking it to the next level, I think we know that not every return should be treated the same. And we've talked a bit about those different use cases already today of, you know, some are international returns that maybe need a fee to justify the cost. Some are serial returners that are not on their first return, but on their, you know, third or fourth or fifth. Some are maybe part of your loyalty program and you want to give them the best experience possible. Some might be fraudulent. And so how do you automate all of those different use cases? The answer is it's not very easy to, you know, build like a one return policy for everything, right? So Loop has a workflows tool that is basically like an if this, then do this engine. And mm-hmm. that's really what powers and automates all of those different customizations and different use cases for the return. So not only automating the basic return experience, but also thinking of all of those different edge cases as well.
Right. Okay. Amazing. So basically, if I was a retailer, correct me if I'm wrong, but you work kind of exclusively with the Shopify platform.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, yeah. So if I'm a retailer, I'm using Shopify, and I have very specific wants. So each product, I want a different process for the returns process. Mm-hmm. You can do that kind of if this, then this for correct. Each of those. Yeah, okay.
Correct. It could be like if they're returning this specific product, then I want this outcome for that instead of, you know, whatever your standard return policy is.
Mm-hmm. And then if there's a really funky case that really needs someone's attention, mm-hmm. then it can be if this, actually they probably do need to come through to you and talk to you kind of thing.
Yes, definitely. Like can create a point where it flags it to the brand itself and stops the automated self-service process and like lets the customer know, like, we're taking a look, we'll reach out, etc. But yeah.
Right. Look, this is a mini bonus question before I get into the last one. If that sounds interesting to people, if it sounds like it could be a huge benefit to them, how do they get in touch? How should they get in touch with you?
Yeah, definitely. The loopreturns.com website is a great way to get in touch. You can reach out to one of our product experts from there. Or if you want to reach out to me specifically, my email is just my first name, Samir, S-A-M-I-R, at loopreturns.com.
Amazing. Amazing. They can speak directly to you. That would be great. So look, last big question. We've maybe brought people on a journey here. I think we've talked quite extensively about, you know, how the returns process can be very drastically different from the status quo that people are seeing in the market these days. But all of this starts with a big step, you know, it takes kind of jumping off to get into this. So what's your number one most vital piece of advice for retailers looking to make a change in their returns process?
Yeah, great question. And so much that could go in here, but I think the most important thing is almost coming back to where we started this discussion today of it's a mindset shift of instead of seeing returns as this necessary evil that is eating away at your costs and, you know, refunds are undoing the great sales that you saw, instead of seeing it as that, seeing it as an opportunity and a customer touch point where you're able to impress that customer, potentially save that sale, potentially upsell them to a different item, and overall leave the customer happier than they were when they started that return process. And that contributes to turning them into a loyal repeat customer. So again, it's that mindset shift of instead of seeing it as a headache, seeing it as an opportunity.
I love that. I think that's a really lovely, positive way to end the conversation. But Samir, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Instead of seeing returns as a headache, see them as an opportunity. I love that conclusion there from Samir. It was a real pleasure to speak to him. I think that there are lessons within this pod that actually go so far beyond just the returns process. It's maybe shifting our mindset on all sorts of things that we see as necessary evils within retail that actually can be really fantastic opportunities. So another massive thank you to Samir, a huge thank you to Loop. Of course, if you are interested in continuing this conversation, please do get in touch with Loop. And, you know, Samir also gave you his details there as well, so you can actually reach out to him. But that's it from us for this episode of Retail Gazette's Unpacked podcast. We will see you again very soon. Thanks very much.